It's Supernal Radio time, and you're here with Anthony Kilner and editor of Supernal Magazine Australia.com.au, Australia's free online health and well-being, spiritual-based everything magazine, and quite unique in its little space. Today we're being joined by Freya Sampson from over in Western Australia. Good morning, Freya. How are you?
Grand risings, everyone. I'm fabulous, thank you.
As
I hope
always.
Everyone else is too. How are you, Anthony?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. I'm just so much stuff going on. I don't know whether I'm Arthur or Martha, really, if truth be known. However, I've decided I'm Anthony and that'll work.
That's for the best.
Try and do that. Now, we're coming to you live through DRN1/Life Radio, our partner and radio station over in WA. And that's free to subscribe to, as well as Supernal is free to subscribe to. So get on, check out DRN1. They have a whole range of different stations, and then also /Life. And you'll get to see Supernal and what we do. So check it out. Now, today's show is going to be rather interesting because we're meeting a person that we could refer to as the Don Tolman, actually, but he refers to himself as a cowboy. We'll find out why very soon. But this is somebody that you've known for a little while, Freya, and we had a bit of a chat the other week, and he's a bit of a character.
He is indeed, and I was so happy a friend of mine invited me along to one of Don's presentations at a hotel in Perth City, and I have such a love of sacred geometry, such a love of health, and Don's sparkling personality and his extraordinary story. I was in boots. I was all in boots, you know, every organ of my body. I dived into his training after that, and I loved every minute of it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, look, let's switch ourselves through to see and talk to Don. So, Don, welcome to Supernal Radio.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and you're looking as colourful as ever in your yellow gear.
They call me Mellow Yellow. Yeah, I like wearing yellow.
I probably should have had a yellow shirt on just for the occasion. However, I didn't think about that, so it's a bit sly of me. It's always a bit of a worry. But that's okay. So let's get a bit of a background behind the Don Tolman story, because clearly you have an accent and you're not from around these parts, are you, partner?
Not at all, mate.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, no, I was born on the Sierra Nevada mountains, right on the border of Nevada and California as a young kid. And there was a mining accident. My dad and his seven brothers were miners. One of them lost both eyeballs. One of them lost both legs. So they quit the mining industry and they moved. But so I've lived in Texas and Nashville, Tennessee, North Carolina, Park City, Utah, which I call Utard, because it's full of morons.
No, oh, dear.
I'm just messing around.
No, I've actually been to Utah. I didn't mind driving out amongst the rocks, but yeah.
Yeah, and then I lived in California. Now I live in Las Vegas, but I'm in Surfer's Paradise, Australia, and I just love it here. I love it.
How did you end up here? Like, obviously, we've got COVID and other stuff going on all around the planet. How did you end up in Australia?
Yeah. I've been here for 17 months, and I've been an international global speaker for 56 years. I've spoken in close to 120 countries. And for the last 22 years, I've spoken in 8 to 9 cities all around Australia 4 times a year. And so I came over here to do my last 8-city tour. And then COVID hit and shut everything down. But that's what I love about Surfer's Paradise, because you don't have to wear a mask. You don't have to do social distancing. There's no lockdowns. I just love it here. And there's no real, all of the international flights haven't come back, so I don't have to leave. And I like that.
Well, look, if there's a country on the planet that you have to get stuck in, I've got to say Australia is definitely one of the best.
I agree 100%. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a very much proud Melbourne born and bred boy, and and I love Melbourne, but I've got to say I hate Victoria. I hate what's going on down here and a whole lot of other things as well. But there's something about flying home to Australia after, you know, traveling abroad that I always sort of just feel good when I fly over our landmass. You know, it's my connection to the planet, I think.
That's cool. That's great. I love it. Australia is my favorite. I wish I could live here forever.
Well, you only look about 56, so I'm tipping that you probably could live here for quite a few years and be quite happy.
Well, I'm 74 years old, but I'd like to live here another 56 years. That'd be nice.
We'd like you to live here for another 56 years too, Don.
Thank you.
Well, it's frustrating. We were planning a little trip up to Queensland to surface, and we're not sure we can't leave the state at the minute. But I'm hoping to get up there before you disappear home so I can meet you in person.
I would love that. I hope you make it.
Yeah, we're going to have to try. I got to do anything to get some warmth. I went for my morning walk yesterday, and it was somewhere between -1 and 1 degree on our little walk. And it was rather chilly.
That's dedication right there.
It was much nicer when we took the dog for a walk in the afternoon because it was actually really warm. We have a tri-paw, Don. She lost a leg to cancer, and so we can't do the normal walks that we did with her. And so we take her for her own special walk most days. And it was beautiful out in the sunshine yesterday afternoon. It's just really quite chilly in the morning.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's what I love about Surfer's Paradise. I go walking every morning, and most days the sun is out. It feels good. It's not freezing cold. I just love it here. Do my beach walks every day.
Yeah. I would like to be up doing that every day too, I have to admit. So I do love the beach. Don, I'm particularly interested in your journey into, I guess, sacred geometry, because it applies to all life on the planet, and your food discoveries and your, you know, that journey you talked us through the other week was just absolutely amazing, from when you ran away from home. So talk us through that.
Yeah, I was just a natural born vegetarian, and all of my family were meat eaters. They loved eating dead animals. They loved to kill them. They loved to slaughter them. They loved to pull out their guts and skin them. They just enjoyed all of the murdering of the innocent earthlings and eating their dead bodies. And I could not stand the screaming and crying of the animals. And I couldn't stand the smell of the dead bodies. But my mom and dad and two brothers and sisters, they just loved it. And so it became a daily thing. And my dad was on the cover of Field and Stream magazine 6 times in the U.S., holding up the head of the elk and the moose and the other animals he had killed. And it just, I don't know, I just couldn't take it. And they thought I was a total idiot. And they kept saying, you got to have your protein. You got to have your protein. Eat your meat. You got to have your protein. And I was healthier and could walk and run faster and ride a bicycle faster than any of them. And yet they kept just angered at me, wanting me to have my protein. And I'm just so thankful that what I learned once I ran away from home when I was 16 years old, because I couldn't take it anymore. They were going to dentists every week. They were going to doctors every week. They were eating all the animals. They drank all of the stupid soda pops that are full of chemicals and everything. And I just didn't have a desire for any of it. And so I just ran away from home. And sheesh, I was on a path of trying to discover an ancient meal that I heard about it, my friend's church, because I went one time. They were inviting me every Sunday. They would come to our house, knock on the door. Do you want to go to Sunday school? And I say, I go to school 5 days a week. Why do I want to go on Sunday? You know, I'd shut the door. Jeez. And that went on for like 2.5, 3 years when we moved into that little town. And anyway, I finally caved in, went to church. And my friend Melvin, his mother was reading out of this huge book called the Bible. And it was a King James version of the Bible. I learned about it later, a few years later. But anyway, in Daniel chapter 1, it talks about an ancient meal called pulse. And it made 4 young boys, the healthiest, strongest ones, in a king's encampment. And they refused the meat and the food of the king. And all they ate was pulse and drank water. And it was so interesting that chapter 1 in the book of Daniel, it just blew me away. So I wanted to find out what pulse was. And that teacher didn't know, and their bishop didn't know. And so when I ran away from home, I had literally my passion. I was going to find pulse. I wanted to find what that meal was. And so anyway, I went to libraries, I went to museums, I went to ancient and arcane collections, and the people over those things would let me in, and I'd tell them I'm looking for pulse, and so they'd try to help me and everything, but I never did find it for 17 years, and then I finally did find it in a billionaire's collection just north of Chicago. It was just, he and I met in a restaurant, and he asked me what I was doing, and I told him all about it, that I just traveled the world. I would get on freight liners at the ocean and ask the captain, if I clean up and help you, can you get me to the next landmass? And they'd say, sure, come on. And when I was there, I would jump on a train, wouldn't let anybody know I was on there, to get to the next city. I went through hundreds of museums and all kinds of ancient arcane records and everything. And I'm so thankful to have learned what I learned going through all of that stuff, because my favorite stuff that I would read and understand, which were translations of ancient records and everything that had been done, was about the physics of nature. And how the brilliance of our ancestors, oh my gosh, they weren't primitive and stupid. They were geniuses. They were scholastic geniuses. They understood nature. They understood plants and flowers and herbs and fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and its relationship to the human body. And I even learned about the ancient signum natura, meaning signs of nature, and how the ancients found out, and it was the women who learned all of this. Anciently, the women were the creatrix of life, and of course, they still are to this day. None of us would be here without women. And women literally have a better sense of smell and sight and hearing and taste and intuition than men. And it's interesting, because a lot of times there will be a group of us men and some woman will say, ew, what's that smell? And we all go, we don't smell anything. And the women can't. And it's just so interesting, and their intuition and how they're so connected. And they created the signs of nature. They knew that a walnut had a hard shell, just like the cranial cap of the brain. You open up the walnut, and the nut has an upper hemisphere and a lower hemisphere, just like the brain does. And if you look at a walnut, it looks like the convoluted juridic folds of the neocortex on the top of the brain. And so they knew that walnuts would target the brain. It can be good for the rest of the body, but it targets the brain. And that's been studied now in today's studies. And they realize, oh my gosh, they were right on the money. you know, and so they looked at carrots. You slice a carrot, it looks like a pupil with an iris and radiating lines, and they knew that carrots were good for the eyes. And that's been studied, and it's true. And so anyway, I learned so much fabulous stuff from them. And I when I went all around these collections, and it just set me on fire. And I realized I have to speak to the public and bring all of this ancient information back. I've got to do this. And so that's what I did. I just started speaking publicly. And then all of a sudden, people were getting so excited about it. And they started putting me on television, on the news channels, on all kinds of, you know, discs that they would sell and teaching all of this stuff. And it just, what a thrill. I mean, it was just such a thrill to learn all of this and bring it back. The last person to ever speak about it publicly was Bohm, and that was in the 1600s. But then everything was taken away from people. All of this information was literally gathered up and taken, and it's all in Vatican City underground. So people don't even have access to these records anymore. And I later found out it was the pharmakia, which is the Greek for poison. Pharmaceutical means poison makers. The pharmaceutical industry is the wealthiest industry on the face of this earth. And it's been published. They make $7 to $9 trillion a year selling their poisonous legal drugs through today what we call medical doctors. And it's just interesting, you know, what's taken over and people believing in all of that. Yeah.
Can you explain for us, Don, the relationship between the Vatican and the pharmakia? How did that all play out in the world?
The pharmakia, the pharmaceutical industry, created the Catholic Church and created religion. And they knew that they could get people because there were so many truths in the King James Version of the Bible that people would believe and trust it. And so they would come to church, and then they had it because people would become believers. And so within all of the churches, and it's so interesting because even in the Mormon church to this day, they're one of the largest stockholders in the pharmaceutical industry, along with the Catholics. They're the largest stockholders. And so a lot of people believe and trust their doctors and drugs, and yet you cannot even patent and market a pharmaceutical drug unless it's poisonous to the human body. If it doesn't create side effects, it doesn't legally qualify as a medical drug. And it's just, gee, it's crazy the things that can go on. And so anyway, that's how they got it all. That's why it's all there. And they didn't want people to know about nature and the wisdom of our ancestors. They just took it away.
And so that's where the term orthodox medicine comes from then, from the Orthodox Church?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure lots of people aren't familiar with this information still to this day.
They're not. And it's, you know, it's... But at least more and more people are waking up and realizing that Hippocrates, Socrates, and the others that listened to the healing women and got on board and began to teach it and get it out there, what the women had learned and taught. And they even said, let foods be thy medicines. And that is correct. Your foods, what you're putting in your mouth and swallowing and putting on your skin and putting in your hair and doing all of that, it needs to be nature made, not chemical crap. Mm. And they actually taught the seven principles of health.
We'll come back to that one in just a sec, Don. It's interesting. I'm one of those people that had never made that connection between the religious groups and pharmaceuticals, and that's just really I'm a bit flabbergasted about that, to be honest, because I hadn't really thought about it. But I know that religious beliefs and religion and the Crusades and all the rest of it and the burning of all the witches was all to stop. Yeah, that was all to stop paganism and the understanding that these were the people, and all they were people that knew how the earth responded and how you could be fed and live off it and heal. And they didn't want that to happen. So I'd never actually put two and two together and came up with four. It's really interesting.
Does that tie in together, that timeline, Don, when all of those things occurred? Was that sort of the birth time of Orthodox medicine, when the witches were burnt, et cetera, et cetera? What kind of year are we looking at for the advent of that?
Well, the pharmakia and religion and creating attacks and death of the healers, it literally goes back up to 5,000-6,000 years. But then it was in Britain where the Church of England began to attack the women and killing them. So they jumped on boats and they left Britain and they wound up in what today is called the United States. And when they hit that continent, they created the 13 states. And that's how America started. It was 13 states originally. And that's because a coven of witches, which meant a group of women, had 13 women in it. And it was one woman of each of the 13 astrological signs. But the number 13 was made evil by pharmakia and churches. And they got rid of the number 13. They didn't want anybody to know why that was considered the most sacred number in the world amongst all of the healers. And they took it away and made it evil. Mm-hmm. And so they even rewrote the Bible because it had the number 13 into it hundreds of times. And they got rid of it and made it the 12 plus one. So Moses and the 12 tribes, Jesus and the 12 apostles. And it just goes on and on, the 12. Yeah,
It's interesting because it's the astrologically, when you come into those calendars, there's 13 moons. And I always thought that was weird, you know, like we have 12 moons and then a blue moon. And it's a bit like we have this thing that does this thing and then we have side effects. I'm like, there's no such thing as a side effect, right? They're just effects or potential effects. So so it's a really interesting concept and I understand, because when I realized that, I started looking at astrology myself, and I understand that the 13th zodiac sign that was removed from the calendar is the one of the healer as well.
Yep, the Ophiuchus. Yeah. Yep, for sure. And it's interesting you brought up the blue moon. There is no such thing. There's only 13 full moons every 364 years, because a month, which used to be spelled moons, they got rid of the O. They wanted that gone. And so there's only 12 months of the year, not 13 moons. And if you 13 times 28, because that's the entire month sequence of the moon, you know, 13 times 28 is 364. And you add up the digits of 364 and it's 13. Okay. And people don't even know that. But the King of England, King Henry VIII, got rid of the lunar calendar and made it the solar calendar. And that's why some months like February only has 28 days. Some months had 30, some had 31. And it just screwed the whole thing up and took away the brilliance of those ancient moons and what it meant to the people on the earth and the plants on the earth. And oh my God, it was crazy.
It would have been, you know, when you consider a 28-day cycle, there's a cycle of life, and procreation and understanding and how it all ties in. I mean, you can really see how what we call modern day time and our, how are we going to, Gregorian calendar has really impacted and changed the face of the planet because of the seasons and all the rest of it. And, you know, we have one of our writers, Charles, who writes on the six seasons of planting and when to plant what and all the rest of it. And that, like, that's
original seasons.
Original seasons. And it's it's amazing. Yet we're all being indoctrinated, you know, Catholic boy, grew up as an altar boy as well. So, you know, embedded in all of that. You don't, you know, never realized any of this until much later in life. And you sit back now and I think, you know, what have I done with 50 plus years of my life? However, it does give you a good grounding in what you're looking at into the future so that you can say, all right, well, that's that bit, but this is this bit, and this is the truth. And that's what we're looking for, isn't it? We're all searching for it. Prayer.
And one of the other things that popped up for me in my own, you know, truth-seeking journey was that in our mathematics or in our geometry, basic geometry, when we're in schools, we don't hear about a two-sided, equi-sided shape in two dimensions, that is, you know, being the vesica piscis. And I thought, gee, that's interesting that shape, which basically looks like an almond eye shape, so the overlapping of two circles creates that little pointed ended oval, right, vesica piscis, that has anciently represented the coming together of two holes and the doorway that's created between dimensions, being, you know, when you conceive a child, you know, and it represents the vulva and all of those sorts of things. I mean, there's just so much that's been twisted off nature's cycle in all of our learning and key things that have been completely left out. And it, like the pulse, I suppose, for you, Don, which we'd like to come back to and hear a little bit more about that pulse, because I've had it and it's amazing. but the geometry of things is key to triggering your consciousness of things, isn't it?
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think too. Now, this is an interesting question because we're exploring the realms of religion and religious belief and understanding and how it's been changed. And of course, that could upset some of our viewers. Have you been on the receiving end of any fundamentalist complaints over your view and their view of religion?
Oh, you know, I've had some people get up very upset with me because they're true religious believers in medical doctors and pharmaceutical drugs and, you know, all the beliefs that they're taught and everything, which some of the things that are taught, I can't agree with because I know the actual history, you know, and so I try not to be offensive to the religious people. I try to, you know, tone it down when I'm speaking around, and I know some of them are there and things, and so I'll hold it back because I just don't want to upset them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting, you know, on my little journey of awakening, I think I went in and out of just about every major religion that I could here in Australia to try and work out what I was as a person and why I was different to everybody else I sort of knew. And, you know, I ended up in a cult and then out of a cult and very quickly. So, you know, the spirit people were looking after me. And it's one of the things that I found really interesting is that I found my path towards being an empath and a medium. And in that sort of circle, then there's the no judgmental thing about anything, but it's also about teaching people to think. And it's saying to them, it's okay to think differently. It's been interesting. I've had some interesting conversations with some very severe fundamentalists that just, you know, this is the way it's got to be and this is what it is. And if you don't like it, we're going to kill you and all this sort of stuff. which of course, look at all the wars that we've been through and how they've played a part in what's happened in life, because people's beliefs can't be open. And I think an open mind through learning and understanding history is a really big step in understanding life and how to be a better person for yourself.
I agree. I do. Yeah, knowing the wisdom of our ancestors, you know. And when you hear the truth, you can feel it.
Yes.
You don't need scientific journals that are so complex and they, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now, when you hear the truth, you know it. And the ancients taught there are things that are true. There are things you're going to see and hear that are truer than the truth that you have now. And there are things that are the truest truth. And if you embrace the truth that you feel, it'll take you to that level of seeing and understanding truer truths. And when you embrace those, it'll take you to a level of seeing and understanding and embracing truest truths. And the truth is always simple. What was that?
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And the way you describe that, it, you know, I can feel that resonate in my heart. I'm sure our listeners can too.
I think when you have to bend the truth to suit your own ideals and agenda, I think that's when people sometimes have trouble separating one truth from another. And that's the hard thing to break. I mean, you know, I don't regret being brought up as a Catholic. I've had resentment over the years, and I think there's been other things. It's the truth. I think once you start to sort of experience and what feels right, exactly the way you said it, you know, this is your truth, open your truth up, and then suddenly there's a truer truth. You know, that's how most people that are learning and go on a journey have started, and most people don't want to accept the truth of who they are, so therefore they're starting off on the wrong foot to start with.
I also was brought up Catholic. I got into a discussion about the fundamentals of Catholicism with my chaplain when I was 12, and I hadn't had very much to do with I went to Sunday school maybe twice if I was lucky. But I got into a point of existential crisis about the questions I was asking my parents about religion, and they weren't able to answer those questions effectively. And the next step was I'll go to the chaplain. And effectively, the long and the short of that conversation ended up saying, if I don't believe in this and if I don't do exactly what it says in the Bible, then I'll burn in hell for the rest of eternity. And I said, cool, that's right. I get your perspective. And I said, okay, now explain to me how come it says thou shalt not kill, and yet everybody rode out on horses and whatever and went and killed everybody in the name of God. I'm like, is that okay? And he's like, oh yes, because that was, I'm like, does this person not understand how insane they sound right now? How, what a hypocrisy this is. And at that point, I just said, okay, thank you so much. You know, like, you know, namaste. Like, I do honor where they're at. And I'm like, this is not for me, you know. And so at that point, I was like, right, well, what do I believe in? And that's what led me down these rabbit holes of truth seeking from the age of 12. So that was, you know, look, and I think things have changed a lot for people these days, that a lot of people still have a strong faith, and that I think is really healthy, because faith is such a huge part of being human. You know, it's one of the key things that we require. It's just, what are we having faith in? Are we having faith in the actual source of all? Or are we having faith in something that somebody else determined for us? You know, is it true? Does it ring true in your heart? All of those things. Is it the truest truth? Yeah, so I'm glad that things have gentled in the world in that sense, But I think that that's interesting. It leads me back to, you know, there's been manipulations and things politically and utilising religion as a political tool in our world for aeons. And it seems, you know, as people are awakening, those things are becoming a bit more, I suppose, a bit more cunning. Even more cunning now because people are awakening. And to come back, Don, to your pulse now and the relationship between pulse and the body. Now, I remember you telling me, yes, you sat in the restaurant, you had the conversation, you're on your last $3, you're having a cup of coffee or a meal or something, and you sat down at the table with this guy and you ended up at the end of your journey having a job working in this incredible warehouse cataloguing all of these antiquities. And I bet it must have been such a moment. You would have been like, thank you, universe. I've just landed in the most perfect place. And then all of a sudden you're going through scrolls and statues and everything else, cataloguing these things. And you can't, how was it the moment you opened that scroll and you saw the recipe for pulse? Did you faint? No, actually,
Freya, I want to know, what was the last meal you had, that last supper before your life changed forever?
The last supper!
Wow.
So when you were in that place and you opened the scroll for pulse, mm-hmm. How did that feel?
When I started reading the translation of that ancient Egyptian scroll, and I read just 2 or 3 minutes of it, I was like, whoa. And I started, oh my God, tears were running down my face. I couldn't believe what I was reading. And I knew in my heart and in my gut that it was going to be about pulse. And it turned out to be 42 pages about nothing but pulse and why it was the most sacred meal ever created on the earth, and cultures around the world grabbed a hold of it and made it for themselves. And they could literally put it in bowls of, you know, ceramics and things that they were making out of clay and bacon. They would put it in, they could hide it under the ground or in a cellar, and it would never go bad. And when there were famines and droughts, they could eat pulse and drink water for months and months, and they were as healthy as they had ever been. And it's just, God, it just blew me away. And it had the recipe of how to make it and why it had the highest proteus of any meal. And proteus is where the word protein comes from, and it means first source. And the ancients knew that plant foods are the first source of protein, but they're quick delivery protein to the human body. Not like slow protein from the dead rotting animal bodies. And it was just so, God, it was so fascinating. I literally cried and cried. I couldn't believe it. And I finally got it and made some and tasted it, and it just blew me away. It was like, wow. So I started making it and sharing it with friends and things like that. And they finally said, you've got to make this stuff and let people know to get it from you. And so that's what I did. And so I have workers now in Georgia where we get all of the organic, you know, foods that go into there, and we make it all up and it's available. And so it's,
and it's delicious. I'm going to say to everyone, get into the pulse. It will make you feel extraordinary. It's incredible.
I'm glad to hear you say that. That's cool. And we have it on thedontolman.com, but don't go to some of the other things like Tolman Self-Care. People think it's me and it's not. And they don't make Pulse properly. They're making it because they read the ingredients and did stuff, but they're making it in a butcher shop that they own. People have opened the bags and found maggots in it. And it's like, oh, good grief. So just DonTolman.com or TheDonTolman.com. And then we have people in Australia, five of them, that buy all of our organic, nature-made, ancient recipes for products and Pulse for healing and health. And those people buy lots of it, bring it over so that people in Australia can get it from them and not have to pay the postage from the United States. And so that's good. And so if it's okay, I think I sent that to you guys, and I hope you'll post it to your people or get it out there so that they can get it from right here in Australia.
Perfect. We will.
And I've written the third volume of a book that I used to sell, two volume sets, but I'm out of them now. But I do have it in a digital form and on a USB and things. And that's Pharmacist Desk Reference. Pharmacist spelled F-A-R-M, pharmacist, getting back to the farm, to the gardeners, to the growers. And the pharmacist book, volume 3, is so amazing. Honestly, if you get volume 3 of my books, the Pharmacist Desk Reference volume 3, seeing and understanding the anatomy and the physiological function of the human body and the recipes and everything in there. And you have that book?
Yeah, I bought everything, Don. I was like, when I got there, I was like, dude, this guy's a wizard. I need everything he knows, and I need it now.
That's so cool. Oh, that's great. Gee whiz, I love it. Yeah.
What's interesting to me, hearing you talk about the Pulse, the other thing, like, I think is extraordinary, Don, is that, well, number one, that it was a 42-page document. Anyone who's got any ideas about sacred geometry will know that. Oh, look at that. Anthony's holding up a book right now. Woo, woo. Oh, look at that. How did you score that so quick? So 42, so 777 is 21. You get the key to the house when you're 21. It's a sacred number. And then you move out of childhood and into teenagehood at that point. And then from 777, again, another 21 is 42. And that's where you step from teenagehood into adulthood in your life. And then it's from, 63, you become a sage, and when you make it to 84, that's a full life cycle. So, and anything beyond that is a bonus in these times, right? So interesting that it was a 42-page document. Now, secondly, the other thing was that you went on, because you couldn't go, oh, well, I'll just take that home and write it all down. You had to work on your mind to be able to develop a photographic memory, didn't you?
Yeah.
You've got a system for that.
Because he wouldn't let me copy it or take it or write it down. He wouldn't let me do any of that. That was so weird. So I literally memorized every page and would go home and write it down. And luckily I did it. And I actually got so good at the ancient wisdom that they taught, because they were scholars. And scholars means those who study what they're interested in. And every child on this earth is a natural born scholastic genius. They're going to know what they're interested in and what they want to do. And in the ancient world, you would join a group of people that had the same interest as you. And so if you were new to the group, you were an apprentice. If you'd been there a while, you were a journeyman or a journeyer. You'd been there a long time, you were a master crafter. And the master crafters knew that their knowledge, their technologies, their understandings of what they were doing and what they were about wouldn't go to the next level until the new ones come in. Because the new ones would look at everything and say, well, why are you doing it like that? And they say, well, blah, 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 blah. And they say, well, why don't you try it like this? And the master crafters are like, whoa, let's try it. And so that's what they would do. And there it was, you know, and that's how they, everything. And so in today's world, as you see, everything that is magnificent within this world, radio, television, telephones, furniture, homes and buildings made out of wood and metals and glass windows and automobiles, helicopters, airplanes, all, everything came from scholars. There's not one precious invention, creative thing that came from what is called academics. Academics are people that love to chant, memorize information on curriculums in schools where they sit in neat little rows so they can take a test and get a good grade. Woohoo! You don't need any of that crap. The reason public schools were created was because of the industrial period. They needed more workers and they didn't have enough men. And so they wanted women. And so they created public schools to put the kids in because it was a babysitting service. That way the women could go to work. And the public schools, I have never been for it. I don't agree with 95% of what they're teaching and what people learn. And it's even been exposed every 10 years in publications in the educational circle in the United States, that if you go to university, by the time you graduate, 90% of everything you've learned is obsolete. And it's correct. So if you're going to go to university, you should only go to party and make friends. That's it. And just find out what you're interested in and do it.
That's a really, I could see how a few people would get rather upset by listening to that, which is quite phenomenal. And I'm not going to say anything because I know, you know, when we're taught to memorize, we're not taught to think. And I get it. And I think, you know, in having taught for a long time now, mediumship stuff, I've moved well away from the standard dogma of how you're supposed to do stuff because it doesn't suit the individual. And mediumship, like scholarship, is individually based on their learning at their time in their way. And so, yeah, I recognized that a few years ago and I just went, you know what, I'm not going to teach anymore. And if people want to come and sit and learn from me, this is how I'm going to do it. And I don't teach mediumship. I teach people how to be the best people they can be. It's, you know, the mediumships is like a secondary thing. So yeah, I find it really fascinating. And what you said really resonates.
I'm glad. I never made any of my kids go to school. None of them. If they wanted to go, I let them. But I preferred that they didn't go. And I tell you, every one of those kids are successful in their lives. They're successful financially. They're successful with friends. They're happy. They're following the path that I shared with them about foods being their medicines and staying away from the doctors, unless it's a, you know, a horrible traumatic accident. Otherwise, don't even go. And most people don't even realize that 9 out of 10 people that go to the doctor have a simple functional disorder that would correct itself within 5 to 7 days if you did absolutely nothing. But you go to the doctor and he puts you on prescription drugs. And so you take your medications, which create side effects, which gets you to go back to the doctor. So then he can give you more drugs. Oh, now you've got this disease. Oh, now you've got that disease. Oh, we need to do this surgery. Oh, you need chemotherapy. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And it's crazy. It is so crazy. Anyway, I hope I'm not offending people, but I'm just so thankful that I've helped close to 3,000 doctors in my lifetime. I've helped them to quit their careers.
Wow.
And to go with Whole Foods. And they changed their names to being holistic. And not all of the holistic doctors are fully on board to the full message, but they're somewhat there. Others are all the way there. And now in the United States, the mafia, which was created by the pharmaceutical industry in Chicago originally, they're paid. The mafia is paid to kill doctors that stop their career and won't prescribe medicines. And 126 of them have been killed just in the last year and a half. Eight of them were personal friends. Aww. And they're still killing them. And it's some of it shows up on the internet. Most of it doesn't. It's taken down by the pharmaceutical industry. But it's crazy. It is crazy.
That is crazy. And it's really sad to hear that, I mean, you know, we understand the world we live in. It doesn't take away the pain of somebody being taken out of your life.
That's right.
That's horrible to hear.
I do think, you know, it's an interesting thing. When I was a child, I grew up in a family with people who had severe allergies. Right, everybody else in my family. And there was a personal process that I went through, you know, in my own, you know, as a, I think I must have been, I don't know, again, I must have been close to 12. So everything seemed to start to pick up for me, 12 to 13 years of age. Interesting. Number 13 coming up. And I recognized that in my family, the way you could get my mum's attention was to be sick. You know, both my brother and my father were very unwell. So I was like, okay, cool, I can be sick, no problem. So I started to develop, I got myself whooping cough at this late age, which is very unusual. And, you know, that then I managed to turn that into asthma after that. And I was like, you know, having coughing and wheezing and whatever. And I was taken to the doctor and all of that sort of thing. And they wanted to put me on whatever puffers and all the things you get. And then, you know, I wasn't getting the attention from my mum that I wanted from this. And I said to her, you know, she was like, oh, you go and do this thing or that chore. And I was like, well, I can't, I'm sick, you know. And she was, I was like, give me attention. She said, she was like, don't be ridiculous. You're nowhere near sick enough. Look at your father and brother. And I was like, well, fluff this. If I got to get that sick to get any energy from you, I was like, I'm done. So from that point, asthma gone, any allergies I'd developed gone, everything gone, because I was like, that's not what I need. Further on in my life, there was little funny little things I was, you know, diagnosed with from doctors and things. And every time I've been, you know, put in that position by them, I've gone, okay, so what's happening inside me that I'm not taking responsibility for in my life? Or what is the emotion that I'm holding that needs to be healed? Or what food or what thing do I need to give myself, feed myself, that's going to transform that? And I couldn't tell you. It's been decades since I've been to a doctor. You know,
that's wonderful.
Yeah. So your body tells you, doesn't it, Don? Like, it tells you what it needs. Like, if you listen to it, it'll tell you, I want lettuce, or I want tomato, or I want all of these things. I need, it'll tell you.
True.
But you got to clean it as well, don't you?
Yep.
These days.
Yeah. So many people that live in a modern developed country has access to fast food restaurants, which is all yuck. They go into grocery stores that have, you know, 500,000 products on shelves and in packages and this and that. And they don't even look at the ingredients or how it's made. And it's just total crap. And, you know, so they're drinking and eating and doing stuff that just is wrong. It's just wrong. and we have to wake up and shift over and get back to Mother Earth and Father Sun and get back to nature and the physics of nature, which our bodies are made of. You know, and when I was talking about protein, you know, most people don't even realize every plant on this earth, and it's been tested, has all 200,000 identifiable proteins, even grass. That's why the strongest, fastest animals on this earth are vegetarian. They eat grass, elk, moose, cows, you know, all kinds of stuff. And look at a gorilla, the strongest animal on the earth is a gorilla, and it's 99% fruitarian. Where does it get its protein? You know, it's just so silly. Anyway, I didn't mean to keep going back into that.
No, it's really good.
Yeah.
But it's great because people need to like get that cognition, because when we're not taught that way, we're indoctrinated to something else. It's good to go back.
Well, I think it helps sometimes to understand. I mean, if a person is vegetarian, you can ask them why they're vegetarian, and they'll go, well, I don't eat anything that thinks. I turn around and say, well, plants have a consciousness too. So where does that leave you? And that's not to be horrible or silly or anything else. It's just to question why they're actually doing what they're doing. So diet is so essential. It's you really need to understand what you're putting in your body to get the best out of it.
What's interesting is, as I understand it, or have been, you know, I got some really clear insights around that, is that, you know, plants take light, and they take light and they turn that, and they take minerals. So they take your minerals, which comes from, which is the foundational geometry of creation, right? Crystals, crystalline geometry. Like if you go in, it's going to give you the sacred geometry, the Platonic solids. And then it takes light from the sun, from the heavens, and it brings that through, brings the minerals in, and that creates the plant itself. And then when we are consuming that, we're consuming geometry and light. So that's got to be healthy. Whereas if we take it a step further, and we take it to an animal, then we're taking it, it's already been consumed and turned into that, and then we're trying to get the light and the minerals and the geometry from a something that's, you know, a step further, plus not to mention it necrotizes in a way that's not healthy for bodies and all of that sort of gear. But it's easier. It's also much easier to digest, isn't it, and to assimilate, because as much as we get nutrients and we get all of the microscopic parts of things that we need to live, we also need to consume light. It's frequency, isn't it, Don? It's frequency that we're consuming effectively.
You betcha.
Mm.
Yeah, everything in physical existence is made of light. Everything. And it's interesting because you can see the stored light in trees, because you can heat up what we call wood and you see the light comes out, and we call it flames.
Mm.
You know? And it's so interesting how everything is made of air, fire, which means fuel ignited releases energy, and that's light. Earth, which is all the plants and everything that's on it, and water. And so the phrase, and I love the study of etymologies and the history of English words and where they came from. And a lot of them were acronyms. That's like fire, fuel ignited releases energy. That's where the word came from. And it's interesting because the phrase, the word a few there be that find it, A-F-E-W, air, fire, earth, and water. A few there be that find it. That find what? Fresh air, light, which is fire, earth, the plants and the physics of it and water. And once you find those things and you really start to embrace it, then you're okay. You know, you're going to be healthy. And it's just so interesting, you know, the history of words and how they were put together by our ancestors and where they came from. I was just so on fire as a young kid and wanting to learn all this stuff. It was so interesting.
But you would never learn that unless somebody actually cared enough. It's probably an extreme way of putting it, but actually cared enough to drive your energy into that space. So, you know, our educators, our community, if you've got somebody in the community that pushes you in a certain way, then that sets that fire up, that sets that learning up. And if all you do is taught rote stuff because you're in a group of 35 or 40 students in a class, the teacher with all the best intentions in the world is not going to be able to actually sometimes inspire every one of those children to the best that they can be, which I have to admit, I had two very inspiring teachers when I was first started high school. And one of them looked like Radar from MASH, and he hated that. However, he set my soul together to write, and I always had an ambition to be a writer, and my life never went down that path until I was in my 30s when I got a job as an editorial assistant and was able to start writing. And then, you know, hence 5 books later and doing what we do with the magazine every month, you know. But I still go back to his way of teaching us kids back then was inspiring us to be or follow the passion or follow that one thing that you're really keen on. And so, you know, it sort of makes sense. And I'm not slamming teachers, because I think teachers are just under-respected and they're not given the resources to look after the amount of kids that we've got going through our schools. And I know several teachers, and you know, they're always under the pump. They're working longer hours than most other people because they have to do all their reports and there's not enough school time, so they do it after hours. And, you know, it's hard work. It really is hard work. However, that inspiring, you know, if it only takes one teacher to inspire one kid, and that kid can just create a world, you know. That's how I see it.
That's cool.
Now, Don, when I said before, we were talking about the Galactic Mayan calendar. Now, that's based on a 260-day year, on a 13-moon cycle, 28-day cycle. And so in that 260 days, everyone has what they call a kin number. And the kin number relates to a specific type of person you are, and then it gives you information about them. And so what I've just been looking up your birth date, which I got off air, you're born on a Friday. Did you know that? Which is really interesting. They've updated.
And so, cool.
And Freya means Friday, so that's great.
Yeah. And here we are on a Tuesday. So that works. Okay, so your kin number, Don, is 233, and your red crystal Skywalker. Now, each of these kin numbers has a dedication, and yours is, I dedicate in order to explore. Universalizing wakefulness, I seal the output of space with the crystal tone of cooperation. I am guided by the power of life force. Now that's absolutely nails who you are, you know, your exploration, the way you're aware, and that you've been taught and you've taught yourself, the such important components. So then when we break that down, red crystal Skywalker, your guide is the serpent. Now the serpent is also red like crystal Skywalker, which represents life force, survival and instinct. Now those three things are exactly everything you've explained to us in part of your journey, that ability to survive. You trusted your instinct, you ended up where you are because your life force was so passionate. So I think that's really important. Your analog and your antipode are both sides of this, or both sides of you. And your analog is the world bridger. So it's about death, equalization, and opportunity. And so that's bringing the world together to create an understanding that flows into your antipode, which is the night, which is about abundance and dreaming and intuition. So you have dreamed the dream of where you want to be and how you're going to help the world to be a better place. And you've created that abundance because of your dreams. And so then your occult is the star. And this is really funny because the star is yellow and it's about elegance to beautify and art.
Cool.
So people can't see what you're wearing, but you're wearing banana colored hat. You're wearing a banana colored t-shirt. Your Hawaiian shirt is banana colored with flowers. So there's that, all that yellow. And yet it's all about artwork as well. It's an appreciation of art, appreciation of the art of being healthy. So that's just a little bit of your dream spell. Shirley, like I said, Shirley's the teacher in this. I'm just the lackey that understands it a bit better than most. and I still have a long way to go. But it's interesting, you were also born in the white wind wave spell, which is all about spirit communication and breath. So the actual timing of your birth is no mistake in that everything you do is about encouraging people's spirit to be the best it can be through communication, through breath. And so I find that absolutely matches you perfectly to a T. And very, very quite interesting. It's interesting. So, yes.
And we love that.
Bless you. Thank you.
You're welcome. System works with it's you know, born from the Mayan calendar, you know, which is more accurate than the quantum clock, obviously. It works, you know, because it's in alignment with cosmic cycles all the way from, you know, a 260,000 year cycle right the way down to, you know, the 13 moons to the short cycle. They were amazing wizards of, you know, cyclic geometry, the Mayans. So yeah, I find it very beneficial.
Yeah, look, it's huge. I mean, just for understanding self, there are so many things out there for people if they want to go exploring. And this is, you know, why we have guests like you on our radio show, to open our minds and expand our minds to what we can achieve if we set our mind to it. And that's really important.
You know, it's interesting, Don. One of you said one of your passions is finding the root of English origin, root origin of English words. And I find that fascinating too myself. Before I met you, that was one of the things I thought, oh, great, you know, linguistics, and what is that, you know, what is that shape mean? What does that resonate to? What truth does that go back to? What has it been twisted off from? So how did you get into, like, where, how do you start to source that kind of information? I suppose these days, because, like, as you said, a lot of things have been removed. A lot of it becomes a bit challenging. So have you got any good tips for people to start truth hunting in, and when they notice a little word and they go, well, what does that actually even mean? Where did that actually come from? How do they do that?
You know, it's interesting because most of the books that were out there and the writings and the scrolls and all of that have been taken away. But I wrote a book on etymology. It was a huge book, but I don't even have copies of it anymore or anything. It was a real weird experience that I went through, but I won't bore you with it here. But the thing is, there are now at least people putting it back out there. And if people will look up the etymology of the word that they want to know the history of, you can find some real good information now on the internet. So just, you know, type in etymology of this word. Don't say the meaning of the word. I mean, you know, the dictionaries and things are fine, but if you want to know the history of it, search the etymology of it and see if it'll come up. So hopefully.
Now I'm going to be on the hunt for one of your etymology books.
That's cool. I hope you find one. All of my stuff was burned in a backyard at my house, and then the house was burnt down. And oh my God, it's just, it's crazy the stuff that can happen to you when you're out in the public teaching things. But, you know, another word that just popped into my head was the word nut. The word nut was a word that meant light. And it was so interesting. The word nutrition, which has the word nut on the front of it, nutrition means process of light. And if you look up etymology of nutrition, you'll be able to read that it's light. Light is filled into the fruits and the vegetables and the nuts and the seeds and the fresh harvest grains and things like that. It's just, man, it's interesting. And that makes the body healthy because it keeps the two forces of nature in balance. And I don't know if you want me to go into expansion and contraction or not, but
well, yes. we do, except that we're now pushing our time limit, and we might have to get back on.
Can we let Dom just talk a little bit about the expansion and contraction? It only takes a minute. I think it's pretty key for everything.
Have you heard Dom talk in under a minute?
Yes. Anyway,
go for it, Dom. Please explain.
Sorry, that was a little fast.
just slow it down just a little bit.
No, the ancients taught that expansion and contraction is everywhere throughout the entire cosmos, or what some people would want to call a universe. But cosmos means beautiful woman, and the entire cosmos expands and contracts over millions of years. Galaxies, and they taught it, and now NASA admits that it's true. Galaxies expand and contract. Planets in their orbit around the sun expand in their, you know, orbit around the sun, and then it contracts. And so it goes from an elliptical orbit, even our planet goes from an elliptical orbit to a spherical orbit around the sun every 40 to 60 years. When it's spherical, it's closest to the sun, and that can warm the Earth up. And that's global warming. It's not deadly. It's not dangerous. That's just pure bullshit. Then it goes into the elliptical, and that's when the Earth cools off. And they say, oh, we're going into an ice age, you know, and different things. It's just the nature of existence. And oceans expand and contract. And our bodies, everything within our body expands and contracts. All 10,000 trillion cells, they expand and contract. Your eyelids expand and contract. When you take a breath, your lungs expand and contract. Your nasals can expand and contract. Your mouth can open up and contract, expand and contract. Your hands will close like a fist. That's contraction. Open up. That's expansion. And you can walk because your muscles and legs expand and contract. And they knew that foods were our medicines. Because the fruits, there are those that cause expansion because you've lost the balance of it in your body, so it brings it back. And contraction. Sometimes tubes can become blocked. It's been contracted. And there are foods that will get rid of the contraction and clear it all out. And it's just like when people have contracted arteries, meaning that it's blocked. If you eat grapefruit, it clears out the blockage. You don't have to have heart surgeries. You don't have to get on blood thinners. In fact, all of their toxic, poisonous blood thinners, which can cause strokes and everything else, it says on every single one of them, warning, do not eat fruit, grapefruit. Warning, do not eat grapefruit. And that's because it's nature's healthy thinner. And so anyway, the ancients taught there's only one disease in the human body. There's not 15,000, 20,000 diseases. That's bullshit. There's only a loss or an overdoing of expansion and contraction. And so they knew that the foods would help them to get rid of that. And there's only two causes of a loss of balance in contraction and expansion. And that's, you're either toxic or deficient. And so just wake up to what you're putting on your skin, in your hair, in your mouth, what you're eating, what you're drinking, and you can be healthy. I've never been to a single doctor in my entire life. I've never had the flu. I haven't even had the sniffles or a cold for over 50 something years. And just be healthy. And I'll shut up. Thank you.
Wow, that was amazing. Thank you very much. That was, look, I think what our listeners need to know is that in the next issue of the magazine, you're helping us out with some story about the, again, the wisdom of the ancients and the seven principles of health. So we're going to be running that story. And what we'll do once we get through that version and it's out and we're both recovered, we'll get you back on and we'll actually talk a little bit more in depth about the story and what you're writing, and because it all ties in with everything that you're doing.
I have one last question, Don, before we sign off today. I was lucky enough to, you know, do the base camp for health with you and then, you know, go on to do the university stuff. And if you're not doing tours and things anymore, can people study with you online, or how does that work now?
You know, if people need consultations to know what to do to have the protocols, which foods to eat and what to do and when to fast and just go on a water fast, when to do a juice fast, when to, how to heal. I've helped type 1 diabetics heal themselves and are no longer diabetic. And they get off the insulin within 30 to 60 days. Stage 4 cancer people sent home to die. I get rid of all their medical drugs. I show them the food and how to detox, and they're totally fine. And it just goes on and on. But I do have Tolman University. Mm-hmm. And man, it was a real tough thing to put together. But the techies here in Australia helped me to do it. And it's all done. And there is just tons and tons of the wisdom of our ancestors from the past in TolmanUniversity.com. And I hope that you'll post that in your magazine for people just to look at and find out about it, because I think it would just blow people away.
Yeah, it's revolutionary. It will change your life. You'll be streets ahead. You will just be like pop, 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 pop with ahas. And yeah, it will. I highly recommend it for everyone.
Mm. And cool. So that was TolmanUniversity.com.
Yeah. Beautiful. But city, CITY, university, meaning the unification of a group.
Mm. Right. Yeah, so I'm
Tolmans
glad you
were the healers. That's what the name Tolman means. Tolman means healer.
Right. And was that so more specific?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So it's cool.
So we'll do that. So look, thank you, Don. It is. Just
thank
been
you.
An amazing journey on this show, just from where you've come from to where you are, and the sharing of your wisdom. So I appreciate your time. And yeah, it's just been an absolute blast.
Thank you. Bless you.
And you.
All right. So just to wrap it up, people, you can go to supernalmagazineaustralia.com.au, where you can listen to all our podcasts once they've been up on the radio show, which is through DRN1/life. And we come out every Sunday afternoon. So tune in at about 2 o'clock and on the internet. And it is free. And you can also read all our back issues, see our videos, with which we've got quite a few these days, and all on supernalmagazineaustralia.com.au and free. So please check it out. In the meantime, thank you again, Don, and thank you, Freya.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
It's been an absolute blast. Thank you very much. All Woo-hoo! Right. Have
thank
a supernal
you.
Month, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.